All right, well, I'm gonna speak for yourself. I am Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if LeBron is really about to turn up the intensity to make the playoffs.
And if the Steelers will regret going all in on Big Ben. But we start today with a wit loss. What you got today, big dog?
Should Zion sit down? That's what everybody is debating today. In the aftermath of last night's North Carolina-Duke game, 33 seconds into the most hyped regular season college basketball game since the Fab Five played at Duke in 1992, Zion Williamson's left shoe blew out, right knee gave out, and all the air came out of Cameron Indoor Arena.
My shoe.
Poof! College basketball's regular season returned to irrelevancy. We were left to discuss whether someone as talented as Mr. Williamson should risk his NBA future playing basketball for championships and giggles. Should Zion sit out the last 2 months of his college career? Before you answer that, I have an even better question. Should Mike Krzyzewski let him play? Why are we putting all the burden on an 18-year-old kid and his blue-collar parents? Why aren't we putting pressure on the most informed and wealthy person in this equation? That's Coach K, the $9 million a year patriarch of college basketball, the former Olympic coach. It's Coach K's job to look out for the best interests of his players. No single individual benefits more from Zion's play than Coach K. Why not ask him? Couldn't you argue Coach K has a moral obligation to sit Williamson as a way of protecting the young man's NBA future and draft status? But let's not do that. Let's keep the focus on the child and his parents. Zion's mom's a school teacher. His stepdad played a few games for Clemson in the 1970s and is a truck mechanic. Let's put them on the hot seat. I say we don't. The situation with Zion provides the perfect opportunity to put some pressure on the people profiting the most off the outdated NCAA system of amateurism. They know it makes little to no sense for Zion to play another game at Duke. He suffered a mild knee sprain last night. He'll recover and be fine. But what happens if he or fellow freshman Cam Reddish or RJ Barrett tear an Achilles between now and the end of March Madness? An injury like that could severely damage their draft stock and earning potential. I've never understood why we in the media haven't put pressure on Coach K, John Calipari, Roy Williams, Bill Self, Tom Izzo, and the other elite college coaches to fight to end the NCAA amateurism for the truly elite athletes. I don't believe every college basketball and football player should be paid. The handful with definite pro futures, the ones who make a difference with ticket sales and TV ratings, should be compensated at a high level while they're on campus. It's immoral for the top coaches to sit silent while kids jeopardize their economic future for the economic benefit of adults. Coach K should sit Zion. All right, joining the desk now are former Duke star Dante Jones and the Ohio State's Iceberg Jim Jackson. Marcellus, before these former college stars chime in, I'm sure you agree with me that Coach K should sit Zion.
I agree with you that he should be a part of the authority, the conversation in terms of Zion. You should not play another single second of college basketball. But I want to just dispel the myth that Coach K cares more about Zion, therefore he needs to take care of Zion than Zion himself. Zion has to care more about himself, his career, his future than anybody else in this equation. But obviously he's been forced to go to the NCAA, go through a year of college basketball to realize his dreams. So then you moved it to Coach K. Hey, look out for Zion, because Zion can't look out for himself because he's forced to play 1 year or be 19. So then why are we stopped there? Let's just go NCAA. Oh, we can't stop there because this is the NBA rule. So if you really want to say who should be in charge of Zion in terms of going back to play, it starts from Zion all the way up to the big boys. But I'm not going to single out Coach K, because Coach K is just doing his job. He said, hey, I get paid $9 million to recruit the best team I can to go out there, win championships. And yeah, some things are going to happen in that process. But Zion is making a sacrifice. Coach K is not doing the best he can in terms of player welfare, but he can't. He's forced by job description not to do that. So why single him out? He's not the only culprit in this equation.
Dookie. Dookie.
Listen.
I think Coach K should sit down with Zion and have a conversation. And sit down with Zion and his parents and have a conversation about what did he come to Durham, North Carolina for. Was it to fulfill one of his dreams, or was it just to go to the NBA and have the platform to boost his draft status? You can't, Coach K can't sit him and be like, you're not playing, even if it's for his best interest, because you never know what's in that kid's heart. You never know if he grew up wanting to play for a national championship or wanted to play in the Final Four or wanted to go to the NCAA tournament. These are real parts of some kid's dreams. And just because he has the ability to be the number one pick, he does not overshadow the fact that he may have a set of goals and things he wanted to check off before he goes, because it was inevitable regardless. And he has a body that I don't foresee an injury that would stop him. Kenyon Martin had an injury that took him out of college basketball, but he was a product that you could not replicate in that draft. He was a proven commodity, and he was the baddest man in the land. And regardless of the fact, Zion is the baddest man in the land, and he will either be number one or number two pick, regardless if he's hurt or playing.
I'm going to push back a little bit on the Zion piece on going to Duke. The reason why he went to Duke or any other college is because he has to.
Right. He doesn't have to.
No, yes, you do.
Because you have kids that have gone overseas or sat out the year.
I know that, but
and you didn't have to go to Duke. You could have went to Clemson.
No, I said any college. Okay. The reason why he's in college
is because he had league system.
He has to. let's circle back a little bit. Keep in mind, college basketball is not about the players. It's about the coaches. That's the difference in what we have. So their obligation is a lot different. They see things totally different. It's a rarity that we have in the NBA coaches who can stand toe-to-toe, a Phil Jackson, a Greg Popovich, you know, guys of that nature, a Pat Riley. The NBA is all about the players. In college basketball, it's all about the coaches and administration and the school. Absolutely. So their best interest, they're always going to be there. These kids are going to come and go. Mm-hmm. The coaches are going to stay and be there. They get the Nike deal, they get the contract. So it's in their best interest to continue to do what they do, because their value is not being diminished. It only increases, okay, with TV revenues and Nike deals. So that's the pushback. Should Coach K play him? No, he shouldn't play him. If he has his best interests in mind, he should not play, because he knows he's one in a lifetime opportunity or ability. Why jeopardize that now?
You put Coach K in an impossible situation.
Yes,
you did.
No, I don't.
You said, Coach K, if you have his best interests in line, play him. But guess what? Before I have your best interest, yours or yours, I have mine. So Coach K has a job.
Hold on, but the question was, should Coach K play?
No.
I said, that's the question. I'm not talking about Zion. Zion should say in his family, no, we're not playing. The question was posed, should Coach K play?
And that's why I said, single him out? You know why? Because just read the sign.
Because this is the situation.
There's a situation. You
know, read the sign right here.
He's got Zion Williamson.
This could be
and
bigger.
And two or three other.
We're not going to stop short of just Zion. Let's read the situation. First of all, God whispers before he yells. Your shoe just exploded. That's a sign that's saying, hey, man, what you doing out there? But I'm going to go to another level, which should happen as well. In the NFL and the collegiate ranks, Trevor Lawrence. I'm talking about the tap-out pre-injury player. Like, I don't need my shoe to explode and have a minor knee sprain to realize maybe I shouldn't play. Because before that moment even occurs, you know where your draft status is. You know what relative scope that is. So why don't you just cast that out right now and say, hey, I'm out. Trevor Lawrence is the one that I'm looking at. If you want to talk about Zion, that's amazing. I get it. But Zion had to wait till he sprained his knee to even start to contemplate this, and we don't know what he's going to do with it. But there's another situation that's even bigger than this, because another guy is going to be a top 10 pick, if not number one overall pick, and is not injured and still has to play two more years of collegiate football just to get to this place. So I'm looking at this situation saying, yeah, if I'm the coach of him, I sit down and talk to him. I say, here's your pros, here's your cons. But if you're telling me to hold you back, well,
Marcellus,
I would never do that.
Marcellus, I get some of what you're saying, but I just for the sake of this conversation, I don't want to move to football.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But why can't we as the media start putting pressure on the people that are most benefiting from this system that I think is universally agreed upon is outdated? When the Olympics say, hey, we're going to push amateurism to the side, and here we are 20, 30 years later, and it's still here in NCAA college football and basketball when these kids are generating this kind of money. Why can't we put pressure on the people directly benefiting? Hey, this system is corrupt. You should do something about it.
We can, and we have. And they have done something about it.
What?
In terms of their voice. I give you a full screen right here. And I've seen it countless times where things like this have come up. John Calipari went on there talking about the one and done rule, said kids should be able to go to the NBA out of high school. That's not our deal. That's between the NBA and the Players Association. Don't put restrictions on kids. That was in April.
That's transferring it to the NBA.
Because that NBA is dictating.
Again.
He can't change that rule. That's what he's saying. That's
the NBA doesn't dictate NCAA amateurism. My argument is here.
Say it again.
The NBA does not dictate NCAA amateurism. They don't allow you in their league. They don't stop the NCAA from paying these damn players right now. We don't need to pass the
buck. Paying has nothing to do with it.
The paying.
No. Because this man will get paid regardless of the fact. If anything happens to his amateurism status, he has an $8 million insurance policy.
So
listen to what I'm saying.
And he should be.
The NBA set this rule. NCAA didn't set this rule. Yes, you're absolutely right. They should be paid. Yes, we should have it.
That's
We should have a change in the rules, and the coaches should lead that fight to change the rule. You're absolutely correct.
Okay, thank you.
But you got to take the kid into it and the kid and the family's goals. While I said Coach K should have a conversation with them, and whichever way they feel is necessary, ride with them, because he shouldn't be in charge of making a decision. Because if the parents are all black, my son wants to play, then we got a different problem. So you can't tell my son what to do. If my son wants to be on that floor and my son wants to accomplish one of his dreams, then you have a problem on your hands. So he should not be able to tell him what to do.
Deal.
Just like you can't tell AD to sit down right now.
Totally different deal. And I get it. If the kid wants to play, the parents want him to play that bad, there's nothing Coach K can do.
Because the kid also said, I wanted to play
Roy
college basketball
Williams,
regardless.
And a lot of these guys I'm going to name, I love them. They're friends of mine. Bill Self, love them. They're making all this money in a corrupt system, and there should be some pressure on them to be more outspoken and to force some change here.
What do you mean pressure on them?
Right.
Calipari's already said this, and you know what? Coach
Calipari said something about the NBA rule.
No.
He hasn't opened his mouth, and there's not one college coach that will open his mouth and say,
Coach
this NCAA amateurism is a sham.
Coach K has went on record and through action to go from being a four-year program to, hey, that one and done something is something. You know why? They're all trying to undermine what the NCAA is. It's no more.
Why they got a tiptoe?
What do you mean tiptoe? Did you read that? That's not
but
on his watch.
I think you missed it.
And you said it. No, you said it.
But you
have to go through a collegiate system or leave this country to get an opportunity in the NBA. So why don't y'all point it at where it's really directed?
I think that the issue is I'm not hearing coaches say players need to be paid. I'm not hearing that. I'm not hearing coaches say.
I'll find another quote.
Okay, where's it at?
You said destroy amateurism. This is a quote directly at amateurism.
No, it's about
the NCAA. No. This is what I'm saying. I'm not saying NBA.
Coaches have said you should get paid.
No, what? They haven't.
Oh, my God. All right. I'm going to Google on.
Coaches said that. Hold up. I'm talking about coaches said that a Zion Williams should be able to get a Nike endorsement. That's what you're telling me? Coaches said that.
No, they said that they should be paid for the services. Now, the way you pay them for services...
Hold up, but listen.
It's going to go out of control because, if you give them a flat fee, like you said the other day, give them $2 million, then that's still not enough.
Nope.
There is no a number available to pay these kids. So we're going to have...
So you just don't pay them?
No. You should pay them.
Okay, so
but they said that.
The difference between zero and $2 million
is capital.
Not in current value. Not if you know that you got $8 million sitting over here and you only getting two.
What's the $8 million?
Insurance policy.
The insurance policy, if you can't play ever again.
No, that's not.
If
you slip past the 16 mark.
Oh, you're talking about that one.
His insurance.
Oh, you're talking about that one.
You get insurance if anything you want to.
They're protecting his contract.
No, they're protecting his contract.
His contract.
You slip past 16, you get $8 million.
What he's also losing, too, is an opportunity for Nike, and we talked about this, to come in and say, we want to pay you $10, $20 million.
Absolutely.
Right now. That's what he's losing, too. That's what he's losing.
So that's where
if he comes in out of high school and can go right to the league, Nike can sign him right there for $100 million.
Wow, this whole domino effect started with Zion, who knows that he has to go 1 year of playing to turn 19 to go to NBA. Starts with Zion, and it ends with the NBA. but we're going to focus on Coach K. And he's not the first domino, and he's not the last one.
But the question,
but we're going to focus on Coach K.
But the question was.
Why not?
Hold up, but the question. Hold up, but listen, I think we're missing a point. We expanded, but the initial question was focused on Coach K. Mm-hmm. So that's why we talked about
and
it.
That's why I disagree with you. I respectfully disagree.
Oh, no, that's fine.
I'm going to go to the root the and the origin of the
question. What he's saying. The question is the problem. Like, Coach K should not be in the question.
In the position.
He should not be in a position.
Oh, he,
to make
he has to be in the question. No, I'm not saying.
No, it's not.
No, because he has to.
Not his son.
Hold up, but listen.
It's not his son. But if he's hurt, if you got to look at the injury. If he's hurt, he's going to damage him. Coach K should advise him on
the
best
thing to do. Yeah, let's don't question the people making all the
he should make the right decision for the kid and advise him, but you can't.
But no, that's my, I agree with you on that.
I know he will. I know Coach K will give him
the people making all the money.
I agree with you on that.
Benefiting from the exploit. Let's don't question. Got it. I'm glad we got that.
February isn't just about one supersized football game. On Spotify, there's thousands of free sports podcasts that agonize over the preseasons, offseasons, and plain old regular seasons of nearly every sport imaginable. Basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, curling, and even hurling. Yes, that's a real sport. Now it's so easy to stay updated with the latest rumors, predictions, and scorching hot takes from some of your favorite game's biggest names. So take it one episode at a time and give 110% of your attention to the thousands of free sports podcasts on Spotify, because the best offense is a good podcast.
Whitlock and Wiley, Jim Jackson and Dante Jones are back. Time for a big story sponsored by Papa John's. Two medium one-topping pizzas, just $6 each. All right, let's move to the Lakers, who kick off the second half of their season tonight against the Rockets at Staples. When LeBron was out with a groin injury, the Lakers dropped from fourth in the West to ninth and then dropped to 10th when he came back right before the break. Even still, LeBron says he's now ready to make a serious push for the playoffs.
It's been activated. Obviously, we would love to have the success where I was out, but we didn't, and this is where we is right now. So, you know, I'm going to be a little bit different, a little bit earlier than I would like to be in years previous years.
Wonder twin powers
activate. Four pale and water. Oh, it's a little cartoon.
Hey, people forget about the Wonder Twins. What?
Did I hit you with some of this?
What?
I'm too young for the Wonder Twins.
Look, I know. Come on, man.
This is a nice little gimmick. And to convince himself to get him mentally ready. But at the end of the day, and it's going to sound good at the end of the season, probably when they miss the playoffs, and say, you know, Luke, I tried. I tried, but we didn't make it. You're fired.
Yeah. It certainly is a gimmick. But I thought you would like it because you're a believer in this whole 110%. Like, oh, I've been going 100%. Well, here I go. Activate. Here's my 110. I thought you liked that stuff.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, I don't believe it either. That's why we got into the argument.
I don't believe he's activated anything.
I don't believe any of that. I've never been on the field in my life and saw somebody who wasn't activated. I may have saw you not doing your best. I may have seen you not fully prepared. I may see you getting your butt beat. But activated, like when you step across the white lines, I'm activated. You know why? Because there's too much at stake. So, LeBron, you're telling on yourself, and I love me some LeBron. Were you not activated for the first 57?
And no.
Okay. Whoa. Okay.
Listen, fellas.
All right. That's bad.
I believe it because I understand it. And what we have now is we have modern science and we have innovation and we have things to tell us about our body that as you train as a basketball player, because it's not 13 weeks like an NFL player.
13.
16.
16, I apologize.
17 with the bye.
16, I'm sorry. It's not 16 weeks as an NFL player. It's 82 games plus another 25 if you're trying to win a championship. So
and the 15 to 16 you sit out, but go ahead.
But it's a process, and all teams are going through that process. They don't want to peak at the wrong time. Uh-huh. That's kind of what happened to the Golden State Warriors when we beat them to win our championship, because they peaked early. They were playing playoff basketball from the middle of the season to the playoffs. And what you do know about modern science is you cannot hold peak performance for a long period of time. There's a certain amount of time you can hold your peak performance, and then you start trending downwards. And that's when you start being able to get hurt and all types of bad things happen. So what I do know about his training process is that from the beginning of the season, yeah, he's LeBron James, but it's going in a point in time where you're trying to peak at a certain point, and they're getting him prepared to peak playoff time. Not now. Yeah. You're not supposed to peak now. If you peak now, then you can't hold it for long for basketball players because you're running miles a night. But your body cannot hold certain things. So what he's saying is that I'm cutting out all distractions, social media and all that, because that's a part of this performance, peak performance, mind and body. I'm cutting distractions out, and I got to rev this up conditioning-wise because he still conditions in the playoffs. Like, he does extra conditioning. I've seen him take
– like me.
I've seen take go at night in condition when he has the most important game of the season coming up. And that's a process of – I've seen his process before. That's why I understand it.
And that's why I think he clarified it and he said now. Because when he was at Miami and back in Cleveland, he could kind of steady himself and get ready. Because I always thought that LeBron, to me, at the age he's at now, is made for the playoffs, not the regular season. Mm. Well, he'll be able to really go hard at that point because you have days in between of rest, and now you'll see the LeBron James. Here's the challenge they have. Being in 10th place right now, you're about 2.5 games back of Sacramento in ninth, probably 4.5 of the Clippers. Clippers probably fall off.
What?
Yeah, your Clippers go fall off, bro.
We got it for that lottery.
But here's the challenge.
My bad.
One is Golden State. Two right now is Denver. Three is OKC. Even if you slide into that eighth spot, you're facing Golden State. You'd rather be in the seventh spot.
Or the sixth.
What, seven?
Depending on what Denver, OKC.
Where Denver, you want to play against Denver.
Facts.
But can you, you got the fourth hardest schedule going into the back half of the season. Can you get to that seventh or sixth spot? That's the challenge, okay? Not that you don't go for it, and I get it, but you got that challenge you're facing.
So, I mean, I could have read this wrong, and I hope I did, because, my favorite sport is track, you know that. Mm-hmm. So, from the beginning, there's different phases of the race, no matter how short the race. There's a reaction phase, there's a drive phase, acceleration, coasting phase. Maybe he's just saying, I'm about to drive, accelerate again, but it's a bad look as the leader. It's a bad look when last week you just told me, you know what, I have nothing to prove. But now you're activating. What are you activating if you have nothing to prove? Those just seem like conflicting messages.
Superpowers.
I think
Dante did a hell of an explanation, by the way. But I think he took this week off and thought it through. And
I agree.
Came to a conclusion. What am I going to do when I come back here? Am I going to go through the motions and we miss the playoffs? Mm. Or am I going to activate and get in this playoff mentality now, knowing that, you know, we might make the playoffs and win a first round. But he probably knows we're not going to win a champ. We won't be playing in June. So why not tap in a little early? Because you know you're going to tap out a little early.
And I think when he said, I have nothing to prove, I think he may have taken the week off and really remotivated himself. Because people
there's
at the top.
Something else I can prove.
See, there's something else I can prove. Like, yeah, people at the top are always trying to find reasons and ways to motivate themselves. Mm. And it's not just off my past accomplishments. It's like, you know what? Oh, yeah, now I got another challenge, another thing I can break through and push myself again.
No one thinks I can take this team to the playoffs.
And that may push them to another level. I'm just scared it's going to come a point in time where that reactivate does not come on, when he can push that button. Because I tell a story of when we're in game six, game five, the man said, man, just get me to the fourth quarter. I'm playing all game. I'll make it happen. And he did it. I've seen this, I've seen people try and flip a switch and it doesn't work. I've seen him flip a switch and go to another place. So I'm worried about the day when he can't, when his body can't do it and flip that switch, because Father Time's under the gun.
Joined now by former Pro Bowl wide receiver TJ Husmanzada. Let's move to Pittsburgh, where the Big Ben Roethlisberger Antonio Brown divorce is all but finalized, but the Steelers have made it clear who they blame for the split, with general manager Kevin Colbert putting the rest of the team on notice that Big Ben has the organization's full support, saying, quote, he's the elder statesman and the Super Bowl winner. If our players were smart, they'd listen to him because he's been there. He's done it. He can tell them, no, guys, what you're doing is good or not good enough to do this. All right, the Steelers have gone all in on Big Ben in a way that I've never seen any organization go in with a quarterback or with any player. Big Ben can criticize whoever he wants, according to the gentleman. I don't get this. This is a mistake. This is not making the situation better.
Yeah, I don't think this is proper leadership from the organization in terms of really trying to echo the power that Ben Roethlisberger has
in that locker room. I think this is going to land incorrectly in terms of how players view this. One, players know both sides of the argument. They know what Ben was doing to AB, and they know what AB was doing to Ben. So for it to come from up top, it's not nuanced enough. It's just saying, listen to Ben. He's been to the Super Bowls. There's going to be some players that's just going to quickly just get out there, Google, quickly just go back in time and say, Ben wasn't the reason y'all won those Super Bowls. I mean, you don't want to get to that place, but you know what? You can't just tell me I got to believe in this guy just because he used to do it. He has to show that through not only his actions and productions now, but how he is a leader and treats these players and guides us through what we're going through right now, because we're not on those Super Bowl teams. So this won't land, I don't think, in the proper place if you're really trying to echo what Ben Roethlisberger has in terms of power.
I thought it was a foolish comment, to be honest with you, because number one, this is the ultimate team game. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers, not the Ben Roethlisberger Steelers. You don't tell a group of men who's the leader. The locker room decides who's the leader. They'll show.
Hell of a point.
They'll show who's the leader of the team. You can't appoint a guy a leader when he's not a leader or he's not viewed as such. I thought when I read this, I was like, up top is what we talked about earlier this week. And you're right now. Management has messed this up big time because they don't view him as such, and they want to say, oh, Ben Roethlisberger's leading. The defense led him to those Super Bowls. So he's been like, you don't do that. Empower Mike Tomlin. Say Mike Tomlin is the leader, and everybody's going to answer to him. He's going to show you the way, not Ben Roethlisberger.
Totally, 1,000% agree with you. And this seems like amateur hour. And again, my narrative on the Steelers from the past couple years, like, I don't think this organization, their structure and what it's Art Rooney Jr. taking over Art Rooney Sr. and what he established with the Pittsburgh organization about management and the executive office always maintaining power. I don't think it works in this era of football. I think it used to work, and you could give the coach all that security and never really give him power. You have to transfer the power to the coach and give him the ultimate authority, not Big Ben and not the executive's office. I just think the Steelers' style of management of that team doesn't work in this era of football when the players get so much upfront money and have some power of their own.
Yeah, I mean, it's really like they just rigged the voting. No matter how the players feel, no matter what the players are thinking, we know how these votes are going to get counted. They're going to add up to where Ben Roethlisberger is your captain. And look, I've been on teams before where you're dealing with the superstar. You can't come out and slight that guy. And then I became the guy on the team where everyone was coming to me and said, can you speak for us? And this is just pushing the ball down the field to where now they have to deal with the next issue. And it will come up because it came up before. We're acting like AB is the beginning of Ben Roethlisberger's issues in terms of leadership. Go back. Guys were calling Roethlisberger out way back in the days, and that's when he was a young pup, just growing up. And then we talk about a guy who says, I'm not going to tutor my backup. We're talking about a guy who says, I'm going to retire or quit on this team. But I mean, we all talk about a guy, and they're like, AB, but AB did all this stuff off the field. Let's not go off the field with Ben Roethlisberger either. Like, everything that we're trying to map on the AB happens to Roethlisberger, but
a lot worse, though. I mean, Ben's transgressions off the field don't compare, and we're not talking about that, but it's – I mean, you look at it from Tom Brady. He's built up enough stock to where if he chooses to criticize you, people will say, oh, Tom Brady yells at guys on the sideline. It's in the heat of the battle. Mm-hmm. Emotions is flowing. Ben Roethlisberger is criticizing guys during a radio interview after all emotions have calmed down later in the week, and it just doesn't sit well with guys. Guys are looking at Ben like, bro, come to me man-to-man. You can criticize me man-to-man. I might not like it, right, but I respect it much more if you come to me. Don't go to the radio and do it. Don't do it publicly.
Yeah, you're criticizing me when you get paid to do a weekly show in the calm of the moment. Like, you calm. You're sitting there. You're cool. You're collected. And you're just giving out this fodder. For what? Like, to what gain? It's almost like he wants everyone to know, I'm the man. Let me distance myself from them. And then the organization doubles down on that same madness. Tough to play there right now.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as the 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you're gonna learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of Speak for Yourself a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at speak.robinhood.com. That's speak.robinhood.com.
Whitlock and Wiley, Jim Jackson back with us.
Bestseller.
My favorite segment.
Bestseller.
Anti-social. Yes, it is.
Okay. Hit him with it.
He getting the whole can.
Hit him,
Darnell Smith, our social media manager.
What's that? Big swole.
About to bust through the jacket.
All day, baby.
What's popping on those Twitter streets?
Yes, sir. We're going to start off in the NBA. Nuggets point guard Isaiah Thomas recently returned to the team, but that hasn't stopped him from staying active on social media. IT took to Twitter to call out thirsty fans online, saying, people on social media be so thirsty to get a reply, they really be fake hate in hopes for somebody to reply to them. That's crazy and sad at the same time, LOL. Whitlock, is this your biggest beef with social media?
Yes, it is. And this is one of the great tweets ever by Isaiah. I'm going to put a name on it because, again, I have this kind of fake hate. Stan Verrett over at ESPN.
Ooh, dropping name.
Constantly tweeting at me. And again, and it's like he thinks I think, or he thinks he hates me, but clearly he's hanging on every word. He loves me. It's not remotely hate. It's this kind of fake hate.
What level of smoke?
No. That's smoke detector right now.
Man,
that's level 4.
And you put me in a position because Stan's my man too, and I love you too. But guess what? We're going to have lunch one day. We're going to settle that. You know what I'm saying?
You going to coordinate it?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Every time he tweets, I promise you, what I think is like, he's not real happy with what he's doing. He would like to be right here. He'd like to be at the cookout.
You know what? But we got to do that, yeah.
But he ain't there. Yeah.
I'm settling this beef between you and
Jim. I don't have a beef. He wants to
smoke. Oh, wait.
Smoke it through it.
We need level five. Damn. Hey. Put the names on it, too.
Man.
Okay. All right, let me get back on subject, I guess. Whew. I didn't know it was like that.
Man.
My biggest beef is not this, because it's all fake. I mean, nobody really about what they saying on the internet. And I know the cliche, none of us is as smart as all of us, so everyone deserves a right to be on the internet. But damn, the back of the class is talking a lot. I mean, damn, they're so ignorant that I'm just like, whew, I go on there because there's some good stuff to learn. I love wisdom of the crowd. I like to gain knowledge from a lot of people. But you gotta sift through so much junk, man. That's just my issue. Fake hate on
it is. Man, it is, man. It's a shame too because people come at me sometimes with some stuff. I'm just sitting there. I won't say that, but sometimes I gotta get my get back. But it's a voice that's given to people that really don't have a voice.
Right.
And they say some stuff sometimes, and I just sit there. But that's just where we're at.
Yeah. And now you know why they don't have a voice.
No, oh, big time.
Let me stop.
I'm going to leave it
but
there.
But dang.
Now what's next?
Yeah. Moving to a crazy ending in college basketball last night, where Georgia and Mississippi State were tied at 67 when Georgia was called for a foul with a half a second left. Mississippi State's Quindary Weatherspoon then missed a free throw, but someone from the crowd threw a stuffed animal on the court. Tom Crean tried to calm down the fans, but Georgia was assessed a technical. Weatherspoon made the first free throw and intentionally missed the second, and Mississippi State got the win. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna pass this straight to our college basketball expert, Jim. Mm. Do you like this rule?
Antiquated.
Okay.
I think you should get rid of it. I do.
Get him out of here. I do. I think it's an antiquated rule. I mean, you know what I mean?
the home team shouldn't be penalized for a knucklehead.
Right.
They can't control a knucklehead. Right. So they shouldn't be penalized. And that one is at a critical point because they're already at the free throw line. Yeah. So he need to be penalized for being a knucklehead right now with
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
Heck no. I ain't got nothing to say about this rule. We already know it's dusty and old.
Wait, what?
Dusty and old? Dusty and disgusting. Get out of here.
Yeah, I have no idea. If I was the refs, I would have ignored it. Look, let's say you're a visiting fan on the road.
I'm going to throw a party.
You can do that exactly.
And I'm capable
time.
Of doing that.
See, right, now that I know.
Now you know, right?
All right, what's next?
All right, so yesterday on the Herd, Colin dropped a bombshell regarding the New York Giants QB position. Take a listen.
And the Giants need a quarterback, and there's nobody in the draft they love. So just remember this. A lot of things add up. Last year of Russell's contract, his wife would prefer New York. Seattle is not an entertainment mecca. Okay, New York needs, the Giants need a star quarterback to replace Eli.
Russ and Colin are pretty well connected. So, Marcellus, do you think Wilson is unhappy in Seattle?
Unhappy, no. Optimized, no as well. I think there's more in terms of the portfolio of Russell Wilson that could be displayed in New York versus Seattle. We already know the marketing opportunities. It could help his wife out in terms of her entertainment products. Everything just gets bigger in New York. That said, this wouldn't land well with the fan base, man. Mm. They totally transferred the Legion of Boom to Russell Wilson. Dang. And they're a playoff team with Russell Wilson right now. You get rid of Russell Wilson, then people are going to say, why'd you get rid of Legion of Boom? If we transfer those two, it would be a bad look.
I do think if there's any truth to this, Russell Wilson's unhappy in Seattle, I believe. Mm. And again, it's not saying – I'm saying if there's truth to this deal that he could end up with the Giants, and he could be unhappy because – even with the leaving of the Legion of Boom, they still have never given him an offensive line. They certainly haven't given him a creative offense. They run, a Bo Schembechler, 3 yards in the cloud of dust offense. Yep. Maybe he's unhappy.
Yeah, maybe he's unhappy. And I think I'm going to go two things. Happy wife, happy life. It may be something in there. But to your point, and I love football, but the last 2 or 3 years, all I see is Russell scrambling around. Because he doesn't have the help. He doesn't have the support. So as a player, and you know this, at some point, I'm like, man, listen, man, I'm tired of trying to run from these 265, 70-pound, linemen, but also linebackers giving me the work. I need help. And right now, Seattle's not giving me that.
Yeah, but I played in a small market with a Hall of Famer who used to every day talk about all the lost opportunities he had because he was in a small market. Mm-hmm. And he used to always, but he wasn't unhappy playing there, but he was like, I'd be happier if I was somewhere else to take advantage.
But something else come with going to that market too. Are you built for the New York market?
Ciara is. I don't think Russell is.
Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah, true.
All right, it's time for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it over.
It's Darnell. My question of the day.
All right. Yes, sir. So, we all grew up playing sports, obviously, little league, professional, and we know how big of an impact it's been in our lives. If sports wasn't a part of your lives, what do you think you'd be doing today?
Oh, that's easy for me. If no sports, no college for me. And so I would probably be working at my dad's bar, the Masterpiece Lounge. My dad's passed, so I would own it and be running it. That was my favorite place on earth. I'd be a bartender at the Masterpiece Lounge in Indianapolis, Indiana.
What?
Master 38th and Sherman.
Master, what? Say
that. Masterpiece Lounge.
Oh, I thought you said, Damn, no limit for real. Oh, man, I get that. I would have been a school teacher. And actually, I went to Columbia, sociology degree, psychology minor. I'm a school teacher. If the NFL didn't work out, school teacher. And was pumped about being a school teacher. I love a fork in the road kid and try to get them to the right place. So I was going to be a school teacher. Give me my $27,000 at Dorsey High. Here I come.
It's a big old teacher, boy.
Man. Yeah, what?
Shut up, dog.
Yes, sir. I don't know, man. I might have been deep in them streets, man, right now. I don't know. Growing up in Toledo and Woodstock, it wasn't a lot of options. But honestly, though, I went to a vocational high school, so I studied business.
All right.
Okay, so to me, I've always been interested in business and real estate. Do it. I think for me, if it wasn't for sports, I wouldn't have transferred over there. And if I wasn't playing sports, it would have been in that aspect. I always wanted to own, even when I was younger, starting to work. My father had me working when I was in the 8th grade. I worked all the way through high school, had jobs in college. Right. Okay, so I always worked. So I had to make my own money. So it would be something entrepreneurial, owning my own business.
Right.
So no. I can have my own say-so.
Is that legal? I thought y'all couldn't work in college.
We could.
Oh, yeah.
No. Yeah, we could. I sold furniture my junior year.
During the actual school year or in the summer?
No, in the summertime.
Oh, NCAA, go get him.
No.
Go get him. He right
over
here.
Over there snitching.
Can't you snitch it, man?
You know.
Right now, what would you be doing?
Yeah. I'll probably just be in a sales role. Like I said, I have a marketing degree, so it would have been something, kind of like Jim said, something business related. You know, outside of sports, business has always been something like a passion of mine, just being able to use my personality to sell and make money that way. So
vacuums, what?
Hey, whatever.
This is Darnell.
Little Fruities, little can. I sold Fruities in Warren Central High School all junior and senior year. Pay for my prom. I think I paid a cable
What's
bill
a
with
fruity?
It. Fruities a little. You never had a fruity with lime?
No, I ain't had a fruity either.
Look, Google
now
it.
Now later or what?
Nah, I know.
We from the now later generation.
Yeah. Me too, but
Jolly Google, Rancher?
It's soft. It's a chewy little fruity piece
chewy
of candy.
Fruity?
You put 20 in the back, spin it around, sell for a dollar.
You selling it right now?
Well, I'm making money. I'm selling you. people on the east side know.
All right.
I'm Whitlock. He's Wiley. Time to put on our thinking caps.
Let's do it.
We're joined by Dante Jones and Jim Jackson.
Boycott. 3 months
you all
ago.
Know.
You said 3 months.
I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer over here, Marcellus.
Gucci.
We're going to take a deeper look at a big issue in the sports world. Gucci. We've got our special cap from Marcellus, our Columbia grad.
That Darnell.
Darnell, bring it on out. Darnell, you can hang out over there. We may get to you here on this topic, but we'll
Selling see. These caps out front. That's what Darnell does.
All right, let's revisit a topic we got into yesterday during a discussion about the role of athletes in politics. I argued that the money today's athletes earn has made them out of touch with their communities in a way that athletes of previous generations were not. But now a leader of the old guard of politically active athletes, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, has taken to Newsweek magazine to sing the praises of LeBron James and today's athlete activists, writing, quote, in the 60s and 70s, there were fewer of us black athletes / activists, Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, Tommy Smith, John Carlos, and a handful of others. Today, a lot more are speaking out. Sadly, aside from the numbers, so little has changed. Athletes are still punished for using their constitutional rights, and the things we protested 50 years ago are still happening. But players like LeBron, Colin Kaepernick, Andrew Hawkins, Serena and Venus Williams, Eric Reed, and many others keep fighting for justice. All right, I'm going to leave some of what Kareem said out of the conversation and just circle back to our conversation yesterday a bit about my contention that the exorbitant amount of money that pro athletes make today has made them different from pro athletes of yesteryear.
I don't think it does. I think it actually lends itself to having a greater perspective. I certainly know that in my case, where I come from, poverty, and now I live a life of affluence, you know, I humbly say. But you know what? It gives me that dual existence. It gives me that perspective. When I was just in one situation growing up in an adverse neighborhood, I couldn't see the forest for the trees, you know? You don't know the grander picture. You don't know the bigger picture. It takes you to climb that mountain a little higher to have that vantage point to realize how you could truly affect and have change. It's interesting. To me, when you talk about activism, you're talking about protest, and you talk about policy, whatever you want to talk about, being political, it comes down to the three T's, as they say, time, talent, and treasure in terms of individual athlete investment in others. You give them your time, man. Go to the community. Go to those who are less fortunate. You give them your talents. You actually just say, look, let's work on this so you can become something greater than me. Or you give them your treasure. You offer services and resources to others. But I do it with a spirit, and I know a lot of people do it with a spirit, unfortunately. It's not front page news. You do it with a spirit so that you can grab that next kid and he could be you or better. So I think a ton of athletes do the right things. I don't think the money disqualifies you. I think it actually amplifies your message, especially when you go back to those who are less fortunate.
Before you go, Dante, disqualifying, I certainly don't think is part of my argument, but just different. I think the athletes with all of this wealth are different from the previous generation.
So is the question about athletes with this wealth in a generation, or does it athletes does wealth not qualify you to be a politician? Because to be politically active, because there are politicians that are worth billions of dollars. There's like six of them, and I can give them to you. Then I can give you more that are worth more than $1 billion. And that is not the reason why they're politicians. It's because they can aggregate people and move them to do different things. Like, wealth is not a play into political activity. And we act like politicians are the smartest people in the world when they're not. The smartest people in the world work for politicians. Mm-hmm. And they give them their perspective. And they help them see the world from a different perspective. So perspective is an aggregate of your life circumstances. I think as athletes, we have a full perspective view of life. Most athletes come from nothing or come from middle class to lower class families, and they have a perspective over their life's journey that can help them see the world and our country in a worldly view, in a full view, because now they have wealth and at one point they didn't have wealth. So you can understand the bottom, you can understand the top, and you have empathy for the middle. So I think an athlete would be in that field to have perspective and have empathy for the American people.
Before you go, mm-hmm. I just want to add this. I think that wealth is most effectively and properly acquired over time. There's a journey to wealth. And that's why, generally speaking, like, you get to be 50 years old and you handle your wealth a lot better than you did mm-hmm. when you were 25. And so I think a lot of times athletes going straight from a college campus to great wealth miss out on that journey, and they're not even aware.
To that point, the average American millionaire is 57 years mm-hmm. old.
But you have politicians worth, Donald Trump worth $3 billion, and he never acquired the wealth. You have governors who are worth $1 billion, and they never acquired it. It was given to them.
There's a reason our country's in a mess.
And the perspective is right, you know, because I think as an athlete growing up, the beauty about being an athlete, especially in the team sport, and I talked about this yesterday, is the inclusion part. Because we can connect with so many different people because of being an athlete. I think, for me, opening up and seeing the world gave me a different perspective. And it made me zero in on what I didn't have and what's not happening in my community, because being an athlete allowed me to travel and journey, talk to different people, see different societies, see different cultures. That rounded me into a better individual. So I'm able to connect with people in my community a lot differently from what I saw and how I grew up. Mm-hmm. And now how to apply it. The wealth part allows me to get into doors in situations that I couldn't normally get into. And it's incumbent upon me, if I'm going to walk that path, to know as much as I can. I think that's sometimes with the fight that you have, is regards to athletes getting involved and not really digging into the meat of the situation and not knowing what they're doing. Well, a lot of that too is you learn along the way by putting the right people around you that help you learn and navigate through these circumstances.
And that's all a politician does. That was my point. Mm-hmm. A politician does that, especially basketball players and athletes, because we have a world game. So we go to different places in the world. We have empathy for different cultures. We get to see things from a different lens than most other sports, and because we have to aggregate these people for our cause of basketball.
As a former mid-major athlete, I get it. The only thing that I think a lot of times we don't take time to consider, and again, it's just because we focus in on all the positives that go along with wealth, and we never like take a step back and go, you know what, there's some ramifications of wealth as well. And I love the television show Game of Thrones. It's about kings and mm-hmm. power and blah, blah, blah. And I think that a lot of times wealthy people, and particularly young people that come into wealth, we don't understand what wealth does to us in terms of gives us a king's mentality. Kings die fat and early. They get lazy. Everything, you know, everything's at their fingertips. Oh, I want something to eat. I want three women. I want this. I want that. It's all at your fingers, and you have this godlike complex a lot of times when you're wealthy and so many people are dependent upon you and you are in control of their success, failure, happiness, or whatever. And so you take on the mindset of the elite. And again, and some of this I'm talking about myself as well, because I'm not removed from wealth. It's just I've spent a lot of time evaluating myself and others where I'm not sure all of us have done that.
Well, I want to push back on that, because I think that using a king as an example, in the old ways and the old sentiments and the old lineage was based on relationship. So you became a king because you were a prince. You became you were a prince because who your daddy was.
Generational.
Your mother,
wealth.
Generational wealth. But now we're becoming new kings, and it's not by relationship. Mama and daddy had nothing. And you know what? No one said you're going to be king because I was never a prince. I just came from nothing and made something of it. So it's a completely different example when you talk about today's athletes.
The issue I'm saying, though, is that once you become a king, though, trust me, you take on the mentality of a king.
No. You know why? Because our origins are different. We're from a different ground, a different soil.
You might take on the mentality because you live a certain way, but you do understand what it means like to be a peasant or to be in the bottom class. And that empathy is what causes great kings to be able to look at
you don't
look
take
at things
on
differently.
The mentality you, take
you don't
on the,
you don't lose
you
that perspective
on the complexion right. of a king you look but, like because you got is, but is you're it, not that mentally.
Isn't that a part of the journey though? Because by going through the wealth and understanding, see, I can give you a blueprint on what it is wealthy and all the things you need to look out for, but until I actually go through it
right.
and experience it, then I know. Listen, when I got money, yeah, I went through some stuff, mm-hmm. you know, but I had to learn and navigate my way, then pull it back.
Yep.
But in order for me to learn, I had to go through it.
Right. First generation.
Here's my pushback would be, is I think we make the mistake, we came from a different place than them, so therefore we're not capable of acting or thinking like them. And I totally reject that.
I reject that too. You're talking about the athletes of the 60s and 70s?
No. I'm just talking about human beings. Mm-hmm. Your argument seems to be that because I came into wealth from great poverty, therefore my perspective is different than anybody else who acquired wealth or was handed wealth.
I have greater understandings of both sides, the best of both worlds.
Doesn't mean, bottom line, what I'm saying is you're just as capable of acting like, for lack, and I hate to go here, but you're just as capable of acting like Trump as anybody else on the planet who comes into great wealth. You can take on those characteristics. It doesn't, just because you came from Compton or whatever, doesn't mean that wealth and privilege, and there's a lot of privilege to being an athlete, a lot.
Oh, yeah.
A lot. And that privilege impacts you the same way it does any other human being. Just because he may have been born into wealth and privilege doesn't mean you can't take on the exact same.
Well, it does, because you're questioning what my foundation was in my formidable years and the pain and the trauma that I went through that will always be a play in everything I do. Like, it's just like when you instill.
We're all weak.
No. We're all strong, too. We just fight the weaknesses. Here's the thing. If you want to look at how we're all principle-based, what are those principles? The years where you're trying to figure out who you are, that is always imprinted. You're a guy who's religious. You're a guy who knows that those principles will always be in you. No matter how far you stray, there's something that is of gravity pulling you back. And that's the same thing with me and my upbringing.
I'm saying that for me, what I believe is that the only thing that keeps me in check is my faith in God and belief in a higher power. Everything, I'm weak in every way possible. And if not for the grace of God, I would give in to my weaknesses a lot more. A lot of people try to slay their demons with religion and things, and they fail. I do too. Last weekend, I failed. and I fail tomorrow. Right. But I'm just saying, most people don't have that mentality. I'm telling you, they take on this thing of, I'm different. I can handle this. Because I had this or that experience, that wouldn't be me. Oh, look at that person. Mm-hmm. I would never be like that.
Respect your testimony, but you know what? I ain't climbed this mountain because I was weak. This mountain, there's atmospheric pressure. There were variables pushing me down. There were situations and circumstances that I would never be able to fully unveil. But weakness will not be
the adage. You're understanding my use of word weakness.
What comes with wealth? What people want is power. Okay, and that's as addictive as anything, okay? And how you handle that power, I think, is very important. And a lot of times, Jason, when you acquire so much wealth, you acquire the ability to influence people and things. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to let go, because if you don't have the foundation, if you're able to move and shake the way you want and move mountains, that power is actually more powerful than the wealth. Because there's a lot of people that got a lot of money that don't have the power. Mm-hmm. And so kings... we're looking for power, along to go with that wealth. And I know what you're saying in that aspect, coming from it, if your base is not strong and you got money, but then now our athletes today have more power. They have more power to influence. LeBron James changed totally everything, training camp, the way things are traded in NBA, that's power. I don't care. There's a lot of dudes in the league that got money. They don't have his power. That's the big
difference.
And where
did that come from, those principles?
Where well,
those,
that's what I'm saying.
That came from?
Yeah.
Here's my last point on that in terms of foundation, principles, blah, blah, blah. What my argument is, if you're not constantly working on your foundation, you are going to fall.
Oh, yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Whitlock and Wiley, T.J. Houspinzada's back. Let's return to Pittsburgh, where the drama engulfed the Steelers this past year, starting last summer with Le'Veon Bell's holdout and ending with Antonio Brown's recent trade demands. But now former Steelers offensive coordinator Todd Haley, who famously clashed with Big Ben, says Bell and Brown were two of the Steelers' hardest-working players. He was effusive in his praise of Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, and I thought it had to be a clear shot at either the Steelers organization, which let him go, or Big Ben. And maybe it was both, but I think it was mostly a shot at Big Ben.
Oh, yeah, definitely shots were fired. And I don't think it was a rifle. I think it was a shotgun. Buckshots, everybody can get it. You know why? Because part of it is on Mike Tomlin. Part of it's on the organization. And most of it, like you said, is on Big Ben. Let's think about it. Le'Veon Bell's issues were contract. Well, that's not Mike Tomlin. That's not Big Ben. That's really upstairs. And then you talk about, well, AB, in terms of being a worker and what type of person he is, then you start to get into the Tomlin, Big Ben dynamic. But I think Todd Haley, who obviously had some issues with Big Ben, remember when they were talking about and reporting that they were going to work together, Big Ben was like apprehensive of that. That relationship seemed like it got better, and then it seemed like it got worse. That said, played for Todd Haley before. He is non-PC, and he will tell the truth no matter what the circumstances. I believe him. Those are two hard workers who now have been marginalized in part by their own behavior.
But don't you think I think he's also saying Big Ben's not a hard worker. You just chose Big Ben, the lazy guy, over the two hardest workers on the team.
Yeah, I mean, we're not making these reports up when we saw Big Ben get out of shape and we saw Big Ben talk about retirement. Like, this all is on record, and with your eyeballs, you saw Big Ben just kind of get relaxed at the position, relaxed at being the powerful one in that locker room. So Todd Haley's like, yeah, the working bees are gone. We're going to see what Big B is about now.
Yeah, I thought it was an axe to grind, so to speak. It's when he brought up, and that's the point I was going to make, is they're hard workers. Like, the guy you guys are giving all this power to, he's not as hardworking as you think. And it's axe to grind because Ben didn't want Todd Haley there anymore. Mm-hmm. Big Ben is the reason Todd Haley is gone, and the front office didn't back him, so it's like, okay, buckshots. I'm gonna get all you guys all at once. And it's Antonio Brown is one of the hardest workers I've ever been around. Le'Veon Bell is a really hard worker. He doesn't even bring Ben in there. And so quarterbacks, you don't have to be a hard worker physically, but at least mentally, you gotta really grind yourself mentally. And from what I'm gathering, he didn't see Ben doing that.
To me, I think he's saying that Ben's not a guy that, as the offensive coordinator, he's not going to live it, eat it, drink it, sleep it the way Tom Brady does with Josh McDaniels. And then he's saying that just look at him physically, he's not going to prepare the way Drew Brees and others have. I think that Todd Haley has a right to be like, hold on, I'm a hardworking guy, because that is one. I know Todd Haley, too. He coached in Kansas City.
Yeah.
You don't have to like him, but he is going to put the work in.
Hey, just look at Ben's body and look at all the other quarterbacks that are around his age body. I mean, he's put on noticeable weight, and you look at these other guys, I mean, they all still look 5 to 10 pounds.
And then just elevated his best friend to offensive coordinator.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's interesting. Athletes, you know, time and time you hear, oh, this offseason I lost 20 pounds. It always catches me off guard because, one, this is your craft, and two, you should never be that far out of shape to lose 20 pounds. But we don't take that on his face. We actually say,
good. He's really focused now. And I'm like, dude, he was so unfocused before. How did he get to that place? Like, you got to remember, you're in your 20s. Your metabolism's revving. You're working out 2-3 times a day. And you are 20 pounds overweight to lose 20 pounds? And we're applauding that? I'm on the other side when I hear stuff like that. And we all obviously know that Ben Roethlisberger has been victim of that.
Yesterday, we went at Big Ben pretty hard. We're doing it again today. People in Pittsburgh upset. Look, man, I hate to say it, and people think I'm crazy.
And you're a fan of Ben. You've said it many times.
Favorite player, wears number 7, plays like John Elway. Love the guy, but he's a headache. And that's just the facts.
Yeah.
And to see this organization, you add Todd Haley's voice to AB and to Antonio Brown's voice, and to see this organization just throw all of their weight. And look, maybe they have no choice. Ben is a talented guy.
Yeah, he plays.
And he plays the quarterback position.
Yeah.
But I just wouldn't bend over backwards the way they have all in on Big Ben. Just seems crazy.
Yeah, when you win Super Bowl championships, and look, the guy has 2 rings and take nothing away from him, it really blinds you from the moment. It blinds you from reality because the equity starts to cloud your vision. And Eli Manning went through the same thing. Like, when you're watching Eli, you're like, dog, enough. But you're still saying, nah, but that's the 2-time Super Bowl MVP.
Ben Roethlisberger. Man, this situation is different. This is an ultimate team game. You can't do this with one player.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Duke head coach Mike Krzyzewski. Uncle Jimmy, what are you, a human bottle of Crown Royal?
Captain Crown Royal over there. Look at me.
What are you?
What is this?
Just make sure, just recognize that you're in the presence of royalty, okay? You should know that. It's running in your veins, okay?
Why are you covering up?
You should know that.
You cold? You can't be cold and all that. What you got on?
What? I'm going to tell you one more time. Respect the greatness. All right, I'm just going to say that one more time. Respect it for what it is.
Mm-hmm. It's a bottle of Crown Royal. Is what it looks like to me.
A fifth. You look like a big old fifth.
A third of Crown
Royal. A third.
Look here, this is what happened when you loyal.
Bevo.
All right.
Bevo.
Let's get to a highlight from our discussion earlier about Coach K. Couldn't you argue Coach K has a moral obligation to sit Williamson as a way of protecting the young man's NBA future and draft status?
Why are we stopped there? Let's just go. NCAA. Oh, we can't stop there because this is an NBA rule. If you really want to say who should be in charge of Zion in terms of going back to play, it starts from Zion all the way up to the big boys. But I'm not going to single out Coach K.
I was shocked by Marcellus's take. I come in here all fired up attacking Coach K, and Marcellus defended him. All right, Uncle Jimmy, what's your take?
It's on days like this that I'm proud of you, my sister's child. I'm so proud of you, young man.
Thank you.
You know, yesterday, I called your mama and I told her. I said, Joyce, we're about to disown you. after you made the comparison of Juicy Smollett to the great Colin Kaepernick.
For real, wasn't that crazy?
Mark Ellis?
Ignorant.
I wanted to slap the taste out of Jason's mouth. And you know how hard I'd have had to slap him.
Make him bow down to the row.
Hey, boy, keep a dab of barbecue sauce up under his tongue like it's a Tic Tac.
I knew you were mad.
A nitroglycerin tablet or something. You damn right I was mad.
Oh, man.
You know, I'm serious, man. The Capricorn Nation, man, we disavow any association whatsoever or any involvement of Juicy Smollett. You know what I'm saying? We told this idiot, hey, keep it simple. Take a knee. Say somebody spray painted your garage door. It wasn't no need to get elaborate and get anybody else involved with it.
Hey, man.
Run the play.
We're not talking about Juicy Smollett. We're talking about Coach K. We ain't talking about yesterday's show. Talk about Coach K.
As I said before to your nephew, and I'm going to say it again, you had a great year. You put the spotlight right where it needed to be, right on them greedy-ass coaches. Mm. They making all this money, and now Zion out here, Mark Ellis, they got him out here playing in hand-me-down size 11, what's that boy's name? But Bobby Hurley. Got him playing in size 11 Bobby Hurleys.
Some Air Hurleys. Stupid.
Man, how you gonna have Zion out here playing in size 11 Bobby Hurley Air Force Ones. Coach K know we got big feet. Zion wears size 16 Air Force One Magnums.
Hey, man, stop. Stop. Magnum. Stop. Should Coach K play Zion?
Coach K ain't no different than any other NCAA coach. Mm. Tom Izzo, Roy Williams, hell, Nick Saban, Debo Sweeney, the whole NCAA system, period. It's just, I'm just paraphrasing the whole thing. It's all crooked. You understand what I'm saying? All of it.
Paraphrasing.
It's kind of like horse racing. You understand what I'm saying? They'd rather take an injured player and put him down permanently rather than share any of their little bit of money. Check this out. Secretariat won the Triple Crown and never saw a dollar of it. The moment he complained about the quality of hay they was giving him, bam, they killed him. Turned him into glue.
Oh, my God.
Same thing gonna happen with Zion and any of these other college athletes. Hey. If you open your mouth about this money, you better be happy running around here being a stud on campus than thinking about getting a dime of Coach K's $9 million.
Message.
Thank you. See, I knew I could
finish with it. Hallelujah.
All right, let me get to
look
my
approval
rating.
Look who agrees with you, though. Look at that. The crowd royal, man.
Let me get to, despite my criticism of Coach K, I still have him at GOAT status.
That's
just barely.
Right.
80. 17 job performance. They got beat last night.
Oh, my 24 God.
24 all-time greatest. It's in the moment.
What out
24
player?
All-time greatest.
The man Eric foot went 16. Through the concrete.
Authenticity of 23. Yeah, so, but
Nike can't test for that kind of force. They're like, damn. Oh, man. Look, I wanted to go 100, but I was like, no one's perfect. So
he lost last night.
Oh, my God. It's not a tournament game. It was just a regular season game that they're going to get to redo. So everything's
11.
Perfect damn near about the guy. But never got caught in any kind of scandal, but 24 still. Something going on.
February isn't just about one supersized football game. On Spotify, there's thousands of free sports podcasts that agonize over the preseasons, offseasons, and plain old regular seasons of nearly every sport imaginable. Basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, curling, and even hurling. Yes, that's a real sport. Now it's so easy to stay updated with the latest rumors, predictions, and scorching hot takes from some of your favorite game's biggest names. So take it one episode at a time and give 110% of your attention to the thousands of free sports podcasts on Spotify, because the best offense is a good podcast.